something we hope you'll really like.
Oh, yes. Voice from the past, present, and future. On the line with us is June Foray. Probably one of the greatest cartoon voices out there anywhere. Hi, June. How are you?
Hokey smoke, I'm doing fine. How are you, Peter?
Fine and you?
I'm just doing great. The rain has stopped, and it's a lovely day in California.
Ah, finally.
Yes.
Now, with all the things you've done, you've been so busy through your entire career, I guess the only now you got around to writing, you've got a book out.
Yes, it's called Perverse, Adverse, and Rottenverse.
Tell us about it.
Well, it's very satirical. It's acerbic, but it's very humorous. It's about all the ancient shibboleths that we've been taught. Never speak ill of the dead, or honesty is the best policy, and all of these wonderful sayings. And I just shatter the dickens out of them. You know, like the slaves who had built the pyramids. If they knew the pharaohs were going to kill them, they would have hailed camels and clippity-clopped over to Mesopotamia. So that's what I do. And never put off until tomorrow. If Snow White had told the witch that she had already had a banana, she didn't need to eat an apple until the next day. She wouldn't have had the problems that she did.
I gotcha. Now, as I said in the intro, you're one of the greatest voice actors out there working. How did it all begin for you? When did you discover you had such a talent for voice work?
You know, Peter, when I was 6 years old, my mother and father were very eclectic type people, and they would take us to operas and movies and the theater, and I would impersonate everybody. And so I came from Massachusetts, and I told my mother and father that I wanted to be an actress when I was 6 years old. And they said, oh, well, my goodness. But they said, well, you've got to take dancing lessons first, because Eleanor Powell apparently was a big star then.
Right.
And she was a dancer. So my mother gave me dancing lessons. Unfortunately, I got pneumonia and didn't take dancing anymore. So she was a singer and a pianist, and she said, oh, well, you should have piano lessons. Well, I hated it. And she would call from the other room and say, sharp, flat, you know. But I was playing baseball with my brother out in the backyard, and I broke my finger, and I couldn't play piano. So that was a very fortunate thing. So I said, I really want to be an actress. So she gave me what they called at that time, elocution lessons.
Right.
And so that's what I took. And I was an omnivorous reader, and a lot of the things that I read, Shakespeare or James M. Barry, I would memorize a lot of the characters and make up voices for them. That's how it all started. And when I was 12 years old, I started in radio.
Ah. Okay, well, there you go, because a lot of great voice actors came out of radio. There was a lot of work then, and a lot of live radio dramas and comedies and the like. Is that what you did?
Absolutely, because you had to double, you had to create your theater of the mind. And I think this is what happened with voice people. I did a lot of on-camera things and a lot of stage things, but Disney heard about me when I was under contract to Capitol Records, and they didn't have a contract or a radio or a record company at all, and neither did Warner Brothers. And so everything we did there, we did at Capitol Records. So then Disney called me over, and the first thing I ever did was Lucifer the Cat and Cinderella. I was a kid. It didn't have any dialogue, but what the heck? I was working for Walt Disney. And that's what started it all.
That's amazing. Now, you've worked. You are one of the greats. You've worked with some of the greats. I mean, you work with Mel Blanc. You work with Dawes Butler. You work with Stan Freberg. I think of those names and adding your name to it. What an eclectic bunch of people working together in voice work. What was that like?
Well, it was a family, really, Peter. Working with Dawes and Paul Frees and Stan Freberg, we all grew up together. And when we did the Bullwinkle show, it was Paul Frees and Dawes Butler and I and Bill Conrad and Bill Scott. And we had known each other for a long time. And it was just, it was family. And we loved each other and admired each other. And it's been such a joy, you know, never having to worry about looking the best we can or getting old or what, you know. It was just our talent and our love for animation. You know, animation is sort of a nexus between reality and fantasy.
It's a good way of putting it. It's an excellent way of putting it. Now, how did you get the role of Rocky on the Bullwinkle cartoons?
I don't know. I had been working at Warner Brothers, and apparently Bill Scott, who was a writer and, of course, one of the producers of the Bullwinkle show and the voice of Bullwinkle, apparently recommended me. I didn't know him at all, and my agent had called and said, there's a man who has an idea for a television series, and he'd like to take you to lunch. And so, you know, a lunch in Hollywood, ain't that the greatest thing in the world, you know, a free lunch.
Right.
So I met them at the Tale of the Cock, which is a very famous restaurant, and I met this very congenial man, short man with a handlebar mustache, young, and a man with him, taller with a mustache, and that was Jay Ward and Bill Scott.
Uh-huh.
And they said, here's the idea we have about a new series. And they said, have a martini. And I said, no, I really don't drink at lunch. You know, I'll have a cocktail before dinner, but that's about it. And they said, oh, come on, we're having one. So I said, okay. Then they talked about a moose and a squirrel. And I thought, boy, that doesn't sound like a very good idea. But after the second martini, I thought it was the greatest idea in the world. And about a week later, we did we recorded a demo. I didn't hear from him for a whole year. And, you know, you forget about things like that because I was working on other things with Chuck Jones and Friz Freleng working at Warner's and with Walter Lantz. And my agent called a year later and he said, remember that guy you had lunch with? He had an idea about a moose and a squirrel. And I said, yeah. He said, well, they're ready to go. And that's it. I didn't know anything about it. And a week later, we started to record. And the rest is history.
How did you develop the voice for Rocky?
Well, when I went in to do the demo, I said, well, what do you want? And he said, well, just an all-American boy, you know, a little Boy Scout who's out to save the world. So I came, well, they said, oh, well, that's great. And then I said, well, how about Natasha? What do you want her to be? He said, she's from Pennsylvania, not Russia. So do a middle continental accent. But don't do Russian because we don't want them on our backs. And as it is, Russia did think that we were horrible and they thought the spies were Russian and it was a detriment to their society.
We are talking with June Foray. She has a book out now called Perverse, Adverse, and Rottenverse. Of course, she is the voice of many characters. Rocky on the Bullwinkle series, also Natasha on the same series, and many, many other voices. We're going to take a quick break and continue talking with June Foray, the First Lady of Animation, here on Montreal's News Talk Leader, CJAD 800.
Here are some words of wisdom from Mr. Know-It-All.
You're listening to Holder Tonight with Peter Anthony Holder on Montreal's News Talk Leader, CJAD 800.
Peter Anthony Holder here with you on Montreal's News Talk Leader, CJAD 800, and this is indeed Holder Tonight, heard Monday through Friday until 10. And we are talking with June Foray. She has a book out. The book is called Perverse, Adverse, and Rottenverse. But of course, most people know her as the First Lady of Animation. Of all the characters that you've done over the years, Do you have a favorite? I know I have one.
Which one is yours?
Granny from Tweety and Sylvester.
Oh, yes. You know, I'm still doing Granny because it's Baby Looney Tunes now. And you know that a lot of the people who are doing Tweety and Sylvester and all of the characters are from Canada.
That's true. That's right, yeah.
Yes, it is. I'm the only one who is an American, and she's Granny, of course. Vous ne parlez pas français, monsieur.
Un petit peu. Now, do you...
I expected to have a French accent when somebody called from Montreal.
How did Granny come about for you?
Well, you know, I've always been an omnivorous reader. And when I was a kid, I read James M. Barrie's The Old Woman Shows Her Medals. And I would always memorize passages and dialogue from these characters, and I invented Granny. And then when Fritz Streling called and said, oh, I want you to do Tweety and Sylvester's Granny, I thought, well, gee whiz, why not use the Granny that I thought of when I was a kid? And she's still going.
That's amazing.
1955 to, what, 2005.
That's 50 years.
I know it. Isn't that something? When I was a kid, I was doing Granny, and now that I'm a senior citizen, I'm Granny. Double now, Granny.
I know I started asking a question what your favorite was. Do you have a favorite?
You know, everybody asks me that. I know most people's favorites are Rocky and Natasha. But, you know, there's a little bit of me in everything, Peter. Everything I do has part of my thinking and my ability to project that thought. So, I don't know, I like Granny, and even Witch Hazel, remember her?
Yes.
Yes. Well, I made Witch Hazel funny instead of evil, and I think that's what people like about Witch Hazel.
You know, I have seen you interviewed before, and now we're talking to you on the radio. And the one thing I've noticed, and every time I've heard your own voice, is the enthusiasm with which you talk about obviously something that you're very passionate about, or career that you've had. Would you say that's what keeps you so young at heart?
I think so, because animation and working in the theater and in movies and in voiceovers, it's extremely stimulating because you're doing different characters. And I've worked with some of the biggest stars, and it's exciting. And I'm still on the board of governors of the Motion Picture Academy. I've been on the board since 1977, and I've met Gregory Peck and Jack Lemmon and Carl Malden and Tom Hanks, and it's so stimulating, Peter, that life is never dull for me.
Now, and you're still working, aren't you?
Yeah, still working. A couple of weeks ago, Disney is doing a five-picture project of Tinkerbell, and I did Betsy, a pack rat, a crazy old lady like that who's deaf and who can't hear nothing. You know? Not like Granny at all.
Now, am I allowed to mention your age?
Please don't.
I won't.
You know...
Okay, I won't.
In the first place, I'm senior citizen, but not that senior.
Okay.
But you know, when people do that, they say, oh, well, I'm not going to hire her for a series because she's not going to live long enough. You know, and it's really very unfair, I think.
But that's why I brought up the point earlier, you know, the saying that you're young at heart, because when I found out how old you are, I said, my goodness, she's amazing, and she's still working, and it's great.
And I look young, and I'm still pretty.
Exactly, exactly.
I know. I just don't understand it. You know, more people when they get to be 65, they're kind of doddering and a little bit old, and sort of walking feebly, but not I. I still have a nice figure and dress well and kind of pretty.
Good for you. Good. Now, what happens when you know, over the years, especially with the body of work that you have, when somebody comes up and meets you and realizes that you are that June for you? Because, you know, you are as famous as any other actor that's out there, except that people don't necessarily know your face. They just know your voice or your voices.
Right.
What's it like when people discover they're talking to June Foray, the June Foray?
Peter, I get fan mail from India, from Poland, from London, from Australia. I just got a call this morning from Australia, from New Zealand, from Germany. People just know me. And Japan, I was in Hiroshima this summer, and I gave a seminar there at an animation festival, and I received an international award for my contribution to the art of animation. And I have a star on the Hollywood Walk of Fame. And it's wonderful. And people recognize my name, even if they don't recognize me. But they do recognize my name and the characters that I do.
You've had such a long and an illustrious career, and you started doing this. You said you wanted to do this from the time you were 6 years old.
Right.
Is the career you've had the career you envisioned as a child?
Well, you know, I never thought I would do voices for animation. I just wanted to be a stage actress, really, because my mother had brought me to see Eva LeGallion and all of these wonderful actors and actresses on the stage. And I thought, gee, Springfield, Massachusetts isn't far from New York, and I want to be on the stage. But then my teacher put me on her radio show when I was 12, and then I had the hubris to be on a professional show when I was 15. And then I just continued in radio, and then I was put under contract to Capitol Records. I'd worked with Steve Allen. Steve was a good friend of mine. I worked with Steve for about 2.5 years. On a radio show, and I guess I did all kinds of funny characters, and that's how Capitol Records put me under contract, did all the comedy records with Freeburg and all their children's albums, and then I started working for Disney and Chuck Jones at Warner Brothers, and I never expected to do voiceovers because I wanted to be on the stage or in front of the camera, but I like what's happened. I've done a lot of on-camera things. The last thing I did was Green Acres. I played a little Mexican gal in that. And
well, didn't you do a cameo in the Boris and Natasha, the Bullwinkle movie?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes, I was the voice of Rocky and Natasha in that.
Mm-hmm. But didn't you also do an on-camera in that as well, or just a voice? Just
no, another. I didn't do anything on camera in that.
Okay.
No.
Well, it's been a pleasure to have you on the program. We've got to mention your book again. The book is called Perverse, Adverse, and Rottenverse, and it's out. It's published by Bear Manor Media. And so now you've got two careers going.
Right, and you can get it from Amazon.com or Barnes & Noble, and they can order it for you. It's very acerbic, but it's funny.
As are you. As are you.
Oh, merci, monsieur. Vous êtes très gentil.
It's a pleasure and an honor to have had the chance to talk to you on the program this evening.
Well, aren't you nice?
There are a lot of fans, generations of fans, who grew up listening to your voice.
That's true.
And now I can say I talk to her. I talk to Rocky the Squirrel, and I talk to Granny from Sylvester and Tweety. I'm a happy, happy guy right now.
Well, thank you, Peter. That's very kind. What time is it at your?
It's 9:28. We're 3 hours ahead of you guys in California.
Yeah, it's 6:28 here.
Yeah. I thank you very much for being on the program with us, June.
Well, thank you, Peter, and have a wonderful day.
You too.
The rest of the day. Whatever.
You too.
Okay.